This is Relevant in Rome, a weekly podcast from the Vatican with Relevant Radio Rome correspondent Ashley Nerona. Now here's the latest on Pope Francis and all that's happened in Rome this week.
This morning, once again, the Holy Father held his Wednesday audience, his Wednesday papal audience. What was the focus of Pope Francis this morning?
Yes, in fact, today the Pope looked at how to preach the gospel, because of course the topic continues, the subject that he picked a few weeks ago, which is apostolic zeal. So how does one preach the gospel with zeal? Well, he said that first of all, one has to understand that the gospel of Jesus is a saving message in and of itself. And with that, there is a contagious joy and a freedom. And of course, that promise of spiritual rebirth that comes with hearing the gospel. It also brings the message of healing from oppression and from sin and death. And the Pope looked at Jesus and the way that Jesus communicated, the essential elements that he used, joy and freedom, healing, also awe. And then the Pope went more into the importance of joy with the gospel, because he said the gospel has to be conveyed joyfully, because you can't speak of Jesus without joy. Because faith, he said, it's a wonderful love story to be shared. But when joy is lacking, then the authentic gospel just isn't transmitted. He said that, yes, a sad Christian can speak of beautiful things, but ultimately it's all in vain if he's not proclaiming the truth with joy. So he said that when announcing the gospel, Christians shouldn't put pressure on others, shouldn't burden them, but instead should unburden them and raise them up and bring them peace through the words of Christ. Because by its very nature, the good news is a proclamation of joy. So he said the quickest way for the faithful to encounter Christ is to put yourself in need. In other words, to tell Christ that you're in need of him, in need of his grace, in need of forgiveness, in need of joy, and then he will come to you. So for Christ's followers, the Pope just really insisted today that every day is a time of grace. It's a new opportunity to bear witness to the good news of God's mercy, of his forgiveness, and to a new life in Jesus, John.
I think it's so appropriate for the Holy Father to talk about joy on this feast day of the conversion of St. Paul the Apostle, because St. Paul himself wrote so much about joy. He would say, you know, rejoice at all times, rejoice. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a perfect connection, which kind of leads us to the importance of this day, this feast of the conversion of St. Paul outside the walls, also the conclusion of the week of Christian unity.
Yes, indeed. It's been a very full week, to say the least, with events starting on the 18th and concluding today, as you mentioned, John. And these events are all dedicated to an ecumenical observance with various confessions being represented, coming together. And events include, there were vespers, there were musical moments, there were prayer vigils, etc. And participants like Anglican and Methodist and Evangelical Lutherans, even Valdensians, which was quite a surprise, Orthodox were there as well. And this evening will be the finale. And this is when tonight at the Church of the Basilica of St. Paul's outside the walls, as you mentioned, John, which is where St. Paul himself is entombed, the Holy Father will preside over Second Vespers today on the solemnity of the conversion of St. Paul. And that will officially be the last event of the week, although there will be a scholarly symposium that's going on for the next few days at the Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas. We know it better here as the Angelicum. And the topic will be discussing the ecumenical studies there that are happening at the Angelicum, John.
And Ashley, it is a very beautiful event, that Vespers at St. Paul outside the walls, to see the Holy Father with all those leaders from all those other Christian denominations, and even our mm-hmm. Orthodox brothers and sisters who are there, all coming together. Yes. With the Holy Father as the Vicar of Christ.
Yeah, Yes, and this has been going on since 1908, which is, so it's got quite a legacy and quite a history behind it. And there have been various leaders of different denominations and confessions who have pledged their support over the years to be part of this. And it's thought to be a very important moment, of course, as people remember the words, the prayer of Christ, the last prayer of Christ, that they may all be one.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, I understand that there is a new survey that is showing the number one reason, the top reason why people are traveling to Roma.
Oh, John, yes, exactly. Now, if anyone is not already excited about coming to Rome, I think this might just put you over the edge, because Rome has become the first in the best food destinations in the world. So, John, this is coming from the Traveler's Choice Best of the Best Awards, and this is something that's compiled on TripAdvisor, all based on travelers' reviews. So they take those millions of reviews that are submitted by travelers from around the world over the last year. And so this is what they concluded. Now, of course, for those who've been to Rome, you know that there are some very special food offerings are particular to Rome itself, right?
It's crazy. So, on every other block.
It's crazy. Yes, it's true. And John, you of course, I'm sure, remember well pasta carbonara or amatriciana. These are particular Roman dishes. Or how about fried artichokes or even artichoke alla romana? And then there's the tender oxtail stew and a piece of delicious pecorino romano cheese. These are all typically Roman deliciousnesses. And so
you make it sound so good, Ashley.
Oh, I'm so glad. Well, I'll certainly have a bite for everyone in your honor. And it's so wonderful because food is such an important part of the culture. We have piazzas dedicated to food markets. There's open-air food markets, closed-air food markets. We eat seasonally here.
Gelato. And can't forget the gelato.
Gelato. Oh, my goodness. Who can forget the gelato? And then, of course, one of the wonderful traditions of Italy is that typically businesses, churches, everybody closes in the afternoon, sometimes for 2 hours, sometimes for 4 hours. But the idea is to encourage people to go home and have lunch with their family. They understand the importance of the family meal, of spending that time together. And they look at food as a very important and sacred moment together. And so it's funny because one of the things that Romans kind of turn their noses up at are people walking down the street eating food, because they believe that is a desecration of how food ought to be enjoyed. You should sit, you should have the full, they call it a 360-degree experience that's shared with family and friends. So if you needed another reason to come to Rome, there you go.
That is a great reason. And Ashley, I need to get my passport updated so that Cindy and I can come back to the scene of our honeymoon and visit Tre Scalini. I hope it's still open after the pandemic.
Yes.
At the Piazza Navona. Never forget that place outdoors.
It is a wonderful place right there across from the church, which actually holds the relic of the foot of St. Teresa of Avila. So you can go have a little spiritual pilgrimage and then go feast afterwards.
Sounds great. Meanwhile, in Florence, Verona, and Pisa, I understand that there is some new archaeological updates for this year's expected flock of many tourists.
That's right. Well, can you imagine, John, that Italy has 4,800 archaeological sites under its care? So when you look at numbers like that, that means there's always lots of things being repaired and being restored in this country. And the Duomo, the famous Duomo in Florence, is one of those. It just got a very important makeover. And what happened was, as they cleaned the doorway on the north side of that beautiful church, and the restorers began removing signs of degradation from over the centuries, they discovered there were actually extensive traces of color on various statues. For example, on the Virgin with Child and on the Adoring Angels group, on those structure, on those sculptures there. So they'd been working since September. And what this means is that these are colors that literally nobody has seen for centuries, because we've all been looking at white statues thinking that there was no color. So this is a very key artistic finding, especially because it's the door of a church, and it's very important since the door is the connection between what's celebrated inside the building and the life of the people outside. So the color really brings a celebratory aspect to what goes on inside that church. And in the meantime, John, over in Verona, now we know Verona best as the city of Romeo and Juliet, right? And right in the middle of Verona, there is a very famous arena. So it's similar to the Colosseum, but this one dates back to 30 AD. And it actually, at the moment, has been closed because it was the victim of a Christmas decoration accident. Yes, that's right. So imagine this, John. Imagine that inside of the arena, for every year since the 1980s, they have placed this great big decoration that is 230 feet high. And it's a gigantic Christmas star. And the base goes up in the middle of the arena, but then it bends over the side of the arena so that this gigantic Christmas star comet-looking thing ends up on the ground there. So this is 78 tons of metal. Now, as the Christmas star was being dismantled from inside the arena this week, the base of the star fell and it damaged some of the steps there, some of those 30 AD steps. And at the moment, it's closed as investigations are going on for what happened. So hopefully for the next trip to Verona, that will be all taken care of. But in the meantime, John, to take you for a moment to Pisa, we all know about the famous Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Of course.
But I'm glad to tell you that it has just received a clean bill of health. And of course, it gets its name because it's literally leaning. But despite that fact, people still pay money to walk up into it. Now, they've just concluded a series of works to try to understand the health, the state of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Now, keep in mind, this is an 850-year-old patient. It has a tilt of around 5 meters or so. It has a subsidence of about 10 feet. But the good news is, indeed, the result of the checkup was that it is in good shape. Now, about 21 years ago, back in 2001, there was an intervention that pulled it slightly back upright. So this was the big investigation to see if that stabilization work was successful. And indeed, looks like the tilt has decreased a bit, look like it was successful. Now, to give you a little background, this tower was started all the way back in 1174. It was finished in 1350. And even in 1350, it had already started tilting, about half of the tilt that it has today. But with this new investigative work, John, I'm happy to tell you that the Leaning Tower of Pisa has a clean bill of health that's good for the next 300 years.
Sounds good.
Relevant in Rome is your weekly connection to the Vatican. Listen to live reports from Rome with Ashley Narona every Wednesday morning at 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central on Morning Air. And listen right here next week to Relevant in Rome for the latest on Pope Francis and news from the Vatican.